What is up, Sava FC? We're back for another episode. This is Antonio, and as always, I'm here with Anthony.
What's going on, everybody?
So the last you heard from us, we were discussing the world news of Messi not re-signing for Barcelona.
That's right. Sad day in Spain. Today I was watching ESPN and noticed that they're going to be playing all the La Liga games.
Yeah, so they had that contract, I believe it was like for $1 billion.
Somebody's got to be pretty ticked off.
If I was ESPN, I would be mad. But listen, that's what happens when you play for a team that is over $1 billion in debt.
You know that he offered to cut his contract by 50%.
Right.
And they still couldn't afford it.
They're just in too much debt.
I know.
Think about what Barcelona's been doing in recent years. They haven't been building. They've just been going out and buying whoever they wanted. Everybody makes fun of Real Madrid for having done that in the past. But Barcelona's really the culprit here of having, you know, pay to play, pretty much. Pay to win.
Right.
They've been doing that for the last, what, maybe 7-8 years?
Right.
There's no more homegrown talent coming through that puts them above everybody else.
My thought process is, how do you rebuild now without Messi there? How do you come out of debt? You know, you got guys that want to leave now because Messi's not there.
Right. Aguero, who signed with Barcelona as a free agent from Man City.
Because Messi was there.
Right. Now, this is a rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. But the rumor is that he already requested a trade.
Yeah, I saw that this morning.
Could you imagine? You just went out and got Aguero, hell of a striker, and he already wants out because Messi is gone.
Do you blame him?
No, I don't blame him. I really don't. I probably would do the same thing if I was in Aguero's position.
Yeah, absolutely.
I came here to play with Messi, my international teammate.
He probably wants to go somewhere like PSG.
Listen, you were convinced.
Still am.
You were convinced it was going to be Napoli. And as Messi said in his press conference today, nothing is set in stone yet.
Nothing yet.
But PSG is an option.
I mean,
they are pursuing him.
They're not just pursuing him. They are.
They have the contract
ready. They're throwing everything at him. You know, I think his father went to go meet with them today, from what I understand.
It's all rumors, though.
Yeah.
We don't know anything for certain yet, but I do think it's going to be PSG.
Supposedly, Wednesday, there's going to be a big press conference in front of the Eiffel Tower. So I think that pretty much seals the deal, right?
But we don't know.
We don't.
We don't. Because what did Messi have to lose today by saying, when they asked him, are you going to PSG?
Oh, yeah, nothing.
What did he have to lose by saying, you know, it's nothing's definite yet?
Yeah,
maybe he really is evaluating his options. I do know this. As heartfelt and emotional as his press conference was, he did say he wants to continue to win.
Right.
And he said whatever club he goes to,
they've got to win.
He knows it's going to be a competitor of Barcelona, and he's still going to play his hardest, even if he has to go up against Barcelona.
Right. We'll see.
It's crazy to just see a guy who came through Barcelona from...
For 20 years.
Yeah, such a young age, and now he's gone.
Yeah.
It changes the whole landscape of European football for at least the next year or two.
Last year he wanted to leave. He was convinced he was leaving. Then they changed their mind. Their family settled back in. Kids go to school, all that. And then this happens. So it's big. You know, people probably thinking, well, he's making all this money. Well, forget the money. Think about the emotional roller coaster he and his family are going through. Now they got to figure out where they're going. You know, I'm pretty sure for the next year he's not going to be with his family because they're going to have to figure out where to move, and the kids got to go to school and
Absolutely.
All that stuff. So it sucks. But at the same time, you know, he gets, you know, he's like a guy that's been married for 20 years and now he's a single dude all over again, getting to, you know, get free reign out there.
Yeah, but he's going to be a single dude who's extremely heartbroken.
That's true. He is. He is.
Look, like you just brought up, he mentioned it in the press conference today. Last year he was prepared to leave and he didn't. This year, he was not prepared. This is why it's hitting him so much harder.
Right. But what are you going to do?
Listen, Sava FC community, we keep following this. Any updates, check out our Instagram. And, you know, we'll try to keep you updated as fast as possible.
I think this week, maybe we'll do our first live
yeah
feed.
And we might have to get on live to talk about Messi if he does end up signing. Because you said PSG has a conference on what, the 10th?
Wednesday. Yeah, whatever the date is on Wednesday.
10th or 11th.
And then on top of that, Grealish signs with Man City.
Well, hold up. Before we move to Grealish, thinking about it, the last time that PSG booked the Eiffel Tower, they announced Neymar when they signed him away from Barcelona.
Maybe they're signing Pele.
Who?
You said Neymar. I figured Brazilian, you know. Maybe they have something with the Eiffel Tower, some, you know, love affair with the Eiffel Tower. They're signing him. They're bringing him in. That's bottom line.
You could have said anybody else. Pele. Guy's so old, he can't even wipe his butt anymore, and you go Pele.
He's not that old. Come on.
Come on, man.
He could still play.
Nah. But, you know, it's interesting to think about. Last time they did that, they scheduled a press conference, booked outside the Eiffel Tower, and they announced Neymar. Right. So they might end up doing the same thing for Messi.
I mean, come on. You got to do it. You got to do something special for this guy.
I just really hope he doesn't go there. I know it's going to be PSG. It just makes too much sense. He's good friends with Neymar. Di Maria's there.
They were all together on vacation a month ago.
Well, he did address that in the press conference as
but
well.
But that wasn't why they were on vacation.
He said it was just coincidence.
But that they were all there at the same time.
Yeah.
That they were all hanging out afterwards. But they were, you know, maybe they were joking around, hey, it'd be nice for you to come to PSG.
They said that. They tried recruiting him, but he goes, there's no way.
Right.
And then he gets to Barcelona and all this happens.
So we'll see.
All right. Now back to Grealish. What'd you want to bring up?
Well, you know, Messi news, Grealish news. He signs for $130 million
transfer. $140 million, €100 million.
€100 million euro. If we're going to round it off, biggest Premier League fee paid for a player since 2016 with Pogba, who had $89 million.
I mean, you got to figure. Obviously, everything is inflated nowadays when it comes to these transfer fees. And unfortunately, there is such a thing as the English tax for these Premier League guys, clubs. Just because he's English, you know, you're going to pay a little bit more for him.
So, you know, those two headlines made the news, superseding a pretty important one in my eyes, you know.
Well, it was funny because the Grealish signing happens and nobody even had time. I'm sure Man City fans were excited about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But nobody had time to process it because a few hours later, the Messi news broke.
Right. And then Lukaku is going.
Not definite yet, but it seems like it's going to happen.
I thought they confirmed it today.
No, I didn't see it being confirmed. I could be wrong. I know that the contract is in place with Lukaku, so that's all set. Now it's just about agreeing with Inter, which I'm pretty sure they're close to agreeing.
Yeah. Inter's got to do something to come out, get out of debt, so they're trying to, you know, dump off guys.
And I think they were like, Inter was like $600 million in debt. Wow. No, nowhere close. It's crazy to say nowhere close to Barcelona being a billion in debt, but
that's close enough.
Yeah.
But
it's crazy.
For me, the biggest news, I think, of all of it is the Christian Eriksen news.
Hold up. You're moving too fast for me today, man.
Come on, catch up.
No.
Did you not have espresso with me?
People want to listen to us talk about these things. You can't just move on from Grealish. He already made his
first
appearance.
All right, we'll go back to Lukaku. Let's slow it down. We'll slow it down.
No, but Grealish, we got to talk about this. He already made his appearance for Man City.
He did.
He subbed on against Leicester City, and what was it, the EA Shield?
Yeah.
Which Leicester ended up winning.
Exactly.
And I love this, because I love drama when it comes to soccer. Who scores the game-winning goal for Leicester?
I don't even know. All I saw was the headline. I didn't read the article.
The youth academy player that Pep Guardiola let go.
That's fantastic. Good for him.
I think it was Iheanacho. Let me just double check.
But this, you know, this might seal the deal for Man City really having to go heavy on Harry Kane.
Kelechi Iheanacho. That's who scored the goal. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Iheanacho's a good player, but Pep let him go, and then this guy scores an 89th minute penalty to win the EA Shield. It's freaking awesome. It's so awesome.
Do they go get Harry Kane now?
So, no. Did you see Harry Kane release a statement?
No, I did not.
He's showing up back to training for Tottenham.
Well, you know, let's touch on that real quick. He's been missing, right? Do you think that's something he should have done?
Yes.
You do?
He's, hands down, if not the best, one of the best strikers in the world. If I have an opportunity to finally leave Tottenham, okay, that sorry excuse of a club, and that's the only way I could define him, because you had all the pieces when you went to the Champions League final a few years back, right? You didn't build on it. You didn't do anything to help the team get better. And all we saw happen was the team continue to get worse. If I'm Harry Kane and I'm in my prime, I want to win.
No, I get that. And I don't blame him for that. But what I'm saying is, do you agree with him skipping out on training because you want to leave?
Yes.
Okay. I don't agree with it, but...
How else are you going to prove your point that you're not happy where you are?
It's been reported that he's not happy. He said it. But still, you got to go. You're a role model. You got to go. You're a captain. Doesn't matter.
Force your hand. That's the way I look at it. It backfired on him anyway.
Obviously.
He had to release a statement, you know, apologizing to the fans and that it was never his intentions and he's going to be back at training, yada, yada, yada. And if the fans buy it, good for you. I don't believe it for one second. I think he just realized that the Man City call wasn't coming and that was it. He had to go back to
Tottenham. Is it too late? It's not too late. It's until August 31st.
Nah, I mean, listen, after signing Jack Grealish for that amount of money, I don't think Man City's going to be able to spend anything else that Harry Kane would be worth, at least, right? If you look at transfer market value, Harry Kane's at least 140, and we're talking about in euros.
Right.
So we're already talking about 40 million more euros that Grealish was worth. I just don't see it happening.
Maybe he goes somewhere else.
Napoli's always looking.
That's true.
I'm joking. He's not coming to Napoli. All right. So it's enough of the EPL. You see what happened in Serie A this week?
A little bit. So your boys... beat, was it Byron?
That was 2 weeks ago. I don't even want to talk about that. It's more of a heartfelt story.
That's true.
Okay.
We can go back there, can't we?
What am I talking about? Tell everybody.
We're talking about Denmark's Christian Eriksen.
Yep.
Shows back up to Inter camp.
Back at the Inter facilities.
They're saying he looks phenomenal.
Yep. Good spirits.
Good spirits. Excellent shape, physical and mental.
All that remains to be seen now is if this heart attack was just due to inflammation or, you know, some type of infection, or if it was an underlying condition.
Right.
And the reason I say that is, for those of you that don't know, Serie A does not allow players on the pitch if they have a defibrillator.
That's right.
He currently has one. But if it was because of an infection or inflammation that caused his heart attack, he can get it removed.
True.
Which means he'll be able to go back on the pitch for Inter Milan.
Right.
If it was because of an underlying condition, this is something he's going to need with him for the rest of his life. Therefore, he would have to leave Serie A. Even if he's cleared to play,
right,
he can no longer play in Serie A.
Unless they change that rule, but I doubt it.
They won't.
And there's a team out up north, that'll probably take him. Ajax, because that's where, was it Blindley?
I'm not sure.
He's the other one that has a defib. He's playing there.
Well, listen, it worked for Ajax, but if I'm Eriksen, there's tons of other places
sure,
he could go.
Sure, absolutely.
I think this was something to do. I'm not positive, we'd have to check, but Eriksen might have had COVID.
During?
The last season.
Oh, okay.
I'm not positive, but we have to check. So it might have been something to do with that. So I'm hoping that he doesn't have to keep the defibrillator on forever. But just the video that Inter posted.
Oh,
it was nice
fantastic
to see him at the facility interacting with his teammates.
Seeing everybody.
The only thing that sucks is he's walking into a bad situation at Inter right now with all the people that are leaving, a new coach. So this isn't the same Inter that he left before the Euros. This is going to be a completely different Inter.
Exactly.
And you know what? If Eriksen is able to make his return on the pitch, he's going to be a bright spot for that team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially under Inzaghi.
100%.
So Eriksen back. What else did we miss this week in the soccer world? Talked about Messi. We talked about Lukaku. Oh, so if Lukaku leaves, Inter is looking at signing either Timo Werner from Chelsea or Duvan Zapata from Atalanta.
Yeah, I saw that.
And if Zapata leaves Atalanta, there was another Premier League player, Tommy Abrams, I believe, that they were looking at signing.
That sounds right.
So there's all these pieces moving that all depend on this Lukaku to Chelsea move, which most likely looks like it's going to end up happening. Oh, this was the other possibility. Lukaku leaves. Dzeko moves from AS Roma to Inter Milan. And then Roma would go after a new striker.
Right.
So, tons of exciting moves, a lot of news, We're getting down.
Did we finally get the confirmation that Busio's going to Venezia finally?
Busio's official.
Finally.
Busio's official to Venezia, so that's done.
That's good. I'm glad. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, with him and Tanner Tessman over there, U.S. internationals representing us now, it'll be exciting to see. Speaking of U.S., that's going to be the second half of our episode. So why don't we take a little anchor break? We'll come back and we'll touch about the U.S. men's national team.
Sounds good.
All right, and we're back. So this is very long overdue because we planned to touch on it right after it happened.
Yep.
But scheduling issues and the Messi news kind of took
precedence.
Precedence, priority over all this. But the U.S. men's national team, what a summer for them.
Yeah, congratulations.
I mean, the CONCACAF Nations Cup, all right, against Mexico, and then the CONCACAF Gold Cup, again,
now,
against Mexico.
For people listening, the Gold Cup wasn't even designed for the men's team to get far. All they wanted to do was see who they had for qualifying for the World Cup.
Right. Which Berhalter has been a genius at evaluating talent and bringing in young talent.
I think he's pretty good as a head coach. And I thought I gave you a stat before. You know, he's only had 35 games under his belt, but he's got 26 wins, 3 draws, 6 losses, a 78% winning ratio, which is better than almost any other coach that has been there for this team.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. And the thing is, too, and I'll be honest, I was one of them. When Berhalter was hired, I wasn't that excited. I mean, what was he bringing to U.S. soccer that was going to change us? You know what I mean? That's what I was thinking when Berhalter.
It definitely wasn't his style. What did you say he looked like? How he dressed?
I was reading an article the other day, and they said that on the sidelines, he just looks like a math teacher. You know,
right.
a math teacher with a great sneaker game.
Right.
And when you look at him, you don't see anything too crazy or too exciting, but the guy's actually a genius. Berhalter came into U.S. soccer after we failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup.
Right.
Which at this point that it seemed like, you know, the World Cup was something that we would never get far in, but at least we were qualifying. After Klinsmann left, they brought back Bruce Arena, which Bruce Arena for U.S. soccer was a great coach.
Right.
This is somebody everybody loved and respected.
But you know what the problem was with Bruce Arena is I feel, and this is where I think Berhalter is going to succeed, is he's too far removed from the younger players.
He's just too far removed from the current game.
Right.
The game has changed, and Arena's mindset and tactics and the environment that he creates no longer allows players to succeed in today's world of soccer.
Right.
But Berhalter came in and changed that entire dynamic. So a little fun fact about Berhalter. Well, a few fun facts. I don't know if you even knew this. Berhalter was playing collegiate soccer at UNC. And when he was playing at UNC, he decided to take off and go to Europe. Now, he played high school soccer with Claudio Reyna. We all know who Claudio Reyna is for U.S. soccer, one of the best to ever play for our men's national team. Reyna didn't even leave to go play for Europe. And at the time, Arena was like, Berhalter just didn't seem like the type of player that would succeed in Europe. You know, you expected him to maybe play some MLS and that was the end of that.
Right.
Nope. Berhalter decided to leave UNC, went over to Europe. And I believe for like the first 4 or 5 years, he played for a couple teams in the Netherlands.
Okay.
Switching around. But hey, they rostered him. They kept him on the team. He was doing something, right?
Right.
Okay. From 1994 to 2000, he was in the Netherlands. Then he went to Crystal Palace. Okay?
Okay.
We know who Crystal Palace is.
Absolutely.
At the time, they were in the second division
for
England. He scored a goal for them. First American to score a goal over in England.
Amazing.
That was huge. Then he bounced around. He ended up playing in Germany for a while, too. And then he came back to the MLS to finish his career, played 2 years at the LA Galaxy. This guy's got experience.
Absolutely.
And I want to say that he played in Europe during one of the best times. That's when all the tactical geniuses were coaching over there.
Exactly.
So he got some good experience.
And I think that's what also makes him close to the players. You know, they're going to probably respect somebody who played in Europe. I mean, listen, Jurgen Klinsmann came over, but no disrespect to him. He's not American. He's got different tactics. I think his tactics just didn't work and fit with the players that he had at hand.
So the difference between Klinsmann and Berhalter, okay? Because Klinsmann might have even been more tactical than Berhalter is. But the main difference is the environment that these two created for the team. So reports on Klinsmann were that his environment was not fun. Klinsmann's environment was created that you always had to be on edge, right?
Right, walking on eggshells.
Correct, because he believed that was what made soccer teams succeed, what made his players succeed and be great. Always having to look over your shoulder and, you know, being on that edge. Berhalter's different.
It doesn't work.
Well, it does for some teams. This guy came over from the German national team and he had some success with them. So Klinsmann knew what would work and what wouldn't work. Then again, Germans are also a different breed. Right. So for them, it worked. But enter Berhalter. The first thing he does, he wants to make sure that his environments are fun, which sounds crazy, especially coaching a men's national team. But the way he looks at it is, we're not always together. This isn't a team where you get a lot of time. So for these guys coming on their international breaks, right, to play for their national team, it shouldn't be just as tedious as it is playing for their current club.
Right.
Number one, he makes the environment fun. Little quote here from Berhalter on what he said he was going to do once he got hired as the coach. He said, "We're on a mission together. What we're looking to do is change the way the world views American soccer. I don't mean we qualify for the next World Cup. I don't mean we go to the second round of the next World Cup. What I'm talking about, guys, is how we play, how we act, who we are as a group, and results. That's the whole picture, and it starts now. We want to put you in a position to perform. We want to create high standards. We want this to be the #1 standard in the United States, and we're going to set the benchmark. Here's the problem. It's going to take a lot of sacrifice from you guys, and it's going to be difficult." That's what Berhalter said when he first took over the program.
Well, you know what? He's right. It's going to take a lot of sacrifice. It's going to be difficult. But from where I'm standing, 2 championships in less than 8 months, he's kind of making it look easy.
He is. And this is, you know, the environment that he created is a great environment. The other thing about Berhalter is that he was able to get into a program that he was able to start from scratch. Think about all the young players that he was able to acquire and just say, we're going to play it out with these guys. And his international experience allowed him to go out and sign dual internationals, dual citizenship internationals, right? Like Sergiño Dest, Musa, right?
Yep.
The midfielder. He's went out and gotten players that they typically wouldn't be playing for this country.
Right.
But he has a project, a plan, an idea, and he brings them this project and he says, I have a bunch of young guys in McKinney, Pulisic, Gio Reyna. You can be a part of this. And these guys are going to be playing together for the next 10 years.
Right. Think about that, right? Next 10 years. What did you say the average age was? It was like 24 for one tournament final and 23 or something like that for the other one?
No, so the average age for the Nations League, so this was the starting 11 of the Nations League. They had an average age of 24 years and 206 days. USA won the Nations League 3-2 against Mexico. Then in the Gold Cup, the starting lineup, the starting 11, had an average age of 24 years and 236 days. So just 30 days more than the team that played in the Nations League. Granted, in the Gold Cup, we played with what a lot of people call our B team.
Right, because like I said before, the Gold Cup was just for him to figure out who's going to complement the other players that are going to come back from Europe to play for the qualifiers.
Right.
But think about this one, everybody. If the average age for the Gold Cup was 24 and 236 days.
Yeah.
World Cup comes around, the average is going to be 25 and 100 and something days. Do the math. 4 years later,
29.
4 years after that, 33. this team, this coach, has a chance to go really far. 92 years ago was the last time the United States made it to the semifinals.
Right.
Maybe this year they make it to the semifinals too.
That was the first World Cup ever.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously a lot less teams back then too.
Yeah. But what made up the team in 1930? Immigrants. Italian Americans, Irish Americans, English Americans. It was a bunch of immigrants.
Now, though, we actually have American players.
Yeah.
Guys that were born here and called this country their own that are representing us, and we're having some level of success.
Absolutely.
It's exciting to see.
What's even more exciting, talking about the American-born players playing more, I'd say, more than 50% of these players are all playing in Europe.
Yeah. A lot of
which is amazing.
Well, like we said, Berhalter right away, having that international experience, that European experience, he's a promoter of playing over in Europe.
And I could be wrong. I don't remember off the top of my head. I might be shooting from the hip. But I think in 1998, there was only one player playing in Europe, and that was Alexi Lalas.
Yeah.
I think he played for Fiorentina.
No, Alexi Lalas played for...
He did play in Italy.
Yeah, he played for Parma.
Was it Parma?
He played for Parma.
Okay. We'll have to fact check ourselves afterwards.
I'm pretty sure Alexi Lalas played for Parma. We'll fact check it, though. I like what he's doing.
Yeah, and I do, too.
Berhalter, I'm going to say, I was one of your biggest critics. I didn't believe in you, but you are changing the way the world views U.S. soccer. And he's only been at it since 2019, the end of 2019 at that.
Right.
Think about with everything that happened with COVID, and he hasn't even had all the time that he was supposed to have. And he's already won 2 trophies.
Isn't that crazy?
The guy's a perfectionist, though. A lot of his players have come out and said, first of all, Zach Steffen compared his trainings to Pep. He said, there's no difference between Pep Guardiola's trainings and Berhalter's trainings. He goes, the guy is attention to detail is unbelievable. When they're at camp, they say they never see the coaches because Berhalter has everybody watching film nonstop when they're not on the field.
That's incredible.
He loves the game, and the way he wants to explore things and find weakness in other teams and grow his own tactics. Like, if you look from the Nations League final to the Gold Cup final, they went from a 3-4-3 formation to a 4-3-3 formation to a 5-3-2 formation to a 3-5-2 formation back to a 4-3-3.
Right. No one ever does that.
And he was able to teach all his players how to adapt in those formations.
That's incredible. Now, I fact-checked us real quick. We were both wrong. Played for Padua.
He played for Padua. Okay. Yeah, I was close. I remember it was still a team with a P.
He was still the first American to play in Serie A.
Yep.
So we have...
Which now we have Gianluca Busio, Tanner Tessman, Brian Reynolds, Weston McKennie.
Who made history in his own right, being the first American ever to play for Juventus.
Right.
So...
Weston McKennie, I love. My biggest issue with McKennie, though, is I'm afraid Allegri's not going to play him. Pirlo played him, and it was great, and he showed that he belonged. But Allegri is such a hard coach that I think he's going to ruin McKennie.
Maybe Allegri should go back and see how him and Ronaldo played together. They complimented each other. I thought they played well.
But I thought so, too. But Allegri has a certain style, man. And let's hope. Berhalter's hopeful that Allegri's going to be good for McKennie. And I'm hoping the same well as well, because McKennie is a huge piece of our starting 11 come World Cup qualifiers.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got to be the starting center midfielder, right?
He's got to be. You can't replace him in that midfield lineup. So,
with that experience alone, you know, playing in Serie A is going to be a huge advantage.
He's got to be there. So, what do you think the roster is going to look like come World Cup qualifier time?
If it was me, like I said earlier before we started recording, if I was the head coach, I would bring in all the guys from Europe, make them the starting 11. They play that first qualifier game against whoever it is, Honduras. I forget who it is. I had it set up, and then I moved along. But if they don't put up the numbers that I expect them to put up, then guess what? One by one, we start replacing them with the guys that belong there.
Well, this is the thing now.
They all belong.
You have, I believe the rosters have been expanded. So we're going to be looking at a 26-man roster for the World Cup. Isn't that what they just did in the Euro?
I think so, yeah.
So we're looking at 26-man rosters. You have over 40 players to choose from now.
Right. And, you know, I'm looking at the qualifying schedule right now. He's going to bring in Pulisic. and McKinney. You're going to have...
Gio Reyna's going to be there.
Gio Reyna's going to be there. Zardes. Hoppy.
See, Zardes is one of those guys that I don't know if he would make it, but then you see what he did in the final.
Right.
And
I think he'll be there. I don't think he's going to be starting anytime over these other guys.
Well, all right. Let's take it position by position then.
Okay.
Let's start with the keepers, right?
So the keeper is going to be a tough one.
Because the three of them are so close in quality. You have Zach Steffen, obviously playing for Manchester City right now.
Right.
You have Ethan Horvath at Nottingham Forest. And then you have Matt Turner, the hero of this Gold Cup, right? Golden Gloves. I think he got one goal scored on him. Two goals. One or two. I don't remember now.
Maybe two.
Because Mexico, they didn't score.
No, they
didn't. So he got one goal scored on him by Martinique.
That's right.
Yep. So...
I think that's because he actually ran out to the concession stand to get popcorn during
Monday. Yeah, he just wasn't watching it at that point. Listen, but Turner too. So Turner's a guy who, of course, because the MLS is stupid and they do drafts, the guy went undrafted. And he had to work his way up with the Revolution, and he finally got an opportunity, and people started seeing how good he is.
This is the same kid that went to school down the street at Fairfield U.
Correct. Fairfield University goalkeeper. Matt Turner has made a case for himself.
Absolutely. Now, I was reading earlier, I think Horvath's not getting the same amount of starting time as Turner, so which might...
But here's the thing. It comes back to that preparation.
Right.
You know, being in Europe over being in the MLS. England.
How about he proved himself? He proved himself to be, you know...
And let's not forget, Horvath had to step in that Nations League final and did a hell of a job. So it's so close between the three of them that I really think they have those three keeper spots... You know, solidified.
Locked in. Yeah.
Whoever starts between the three of them now remains to be seen.
Exactly.
But I'm hoping Turner ends up getting a contract in Europe and ends up being a starting goalkeeper over there and starts World Cup qualifiers in the World Cup. Because for me, Turner's my favorite. Yeah. I like Steffen, but he doesn't play that much. I like Horvath a lot, but he might not be starting over in Nottingham.
So I'm pretty sure
he will be since his first year over there, but we that still remains to be seen. Turner, however, when I watch this guy, and you guys are going to call me crazy, I see the American Donnarumma.
Well, he's big, he's lanky, he's agile, you know, he's flying around, he's got command of his team back there, he's got vision, so, you know, I agree.
The only thing that Turner isn't as good with, as we saw in a couple scary moments during the Gold Cup, not too good with the ball being passed back to his feet.
Right.
But he still got out of those scary situations, so.
Who's your center back?
Whew. Center back is tough because, as we saw, we have a lot of good players.
Yeah.
All right.
This is the first time that this team, this men's team, is so defensive heavy.
I wouldn't say defensive heavy, but they have their talent. Our midfield and our attack is where we shine, but the defense is starting to solidify itself. John Brooks has to start.
I was going
to
say Brooks has got to be there.
You can't take away that from Brooks at center back. But then,
how about your right back?
That I don't know, but let me finish the center backs. Obviously, we play with more than one hand.
No, I know, but you can't start. Well, if they're playing 3-4-3.
Or we play. Exactly. We don't know what they're going to be playing
that's
yet.
That's true.
So let's go with the center backs. John Brooks, for sure. Miles Robinson, after that game winner, how do you not take him on the team?
Exactly.
Right? Miles Robinson has to be there.
What about Anthony Robinson?
Anthony Robinson's going to get called up. I have no doubt about that. Matt Miazga has got to get called up, in my opinion. This is another guy over... He's owned by Chelsea, but he's playing all over Europe. He keeps getting loaned out. He's not good enough for Chelsea. We get that.
Well, Chelsea's just, you know, Chelsea. So,
but he's still got the experience.
Yeah.
And he's a hell of a center back.
Don't forget about Cannon.
Right. Reggie Cannon. He's another one.
Sam Vines.
So Sam Vines is another one that proved himself at the Gold Cup.
And then we're missing another one. Dest.
Oh, Sergino Dest is a guarantee. We know he's going to be on the defense.
You know, this is what I'm talking about. Heavy defensive team. I mean, they're good. They got some players there.
Look, defensively, I think we're going to be A-okay. But John Brooks, Sergino Dest, Anthony Robinson, Miles Robinson, Sam Vine, Matt Miazga, and then this is the one that I have issues with. You got to call up DeAndre Yedlin, don't you?
Yeah.
DeAndre Yedlin exploded onto the scene after Klinsmann gave him his chance in, what was it, the 2014 World Cup. This is another guy getting European experience, played for Newcastle, Now he's with Galatasaray over in Turkey. You got to call him up. Doesn't matter that this guy's older.
Right.
What he adds to this team, he's still got speed. He's still a good defender. You have to call him up. He's got to be a part of that lineup. He would be my favorite to play outside back. But then you have Shaq Moore, who just had a great Gold Cup. So
yeah, unfortunately, in my eyes, Shaq Moore might get shafted.
I think so, too. It's just, it's crazy to think about all the options you have on defense now. It's like, what do you do with them? And we didn't even bring up Walker Zimmerman. Zimmerman played in the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
He did just fine.
Yeah, he did good.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
It gets even crazier once we go to that midfield.
Well, the midfield, so this is my favorite part of the U.S. men's national team. So obviously, you got to go with Kellen Acosta. This is the one guy that I don't care that he plays in the MLS. What he does is just, it's stupid on the field.
Yeah, he's good. You got Buzio.
I don't know if Buzio's going to get the call. Listen.
I think so.
No way.
You have him on the bench.
Buzio's not going to get called up. First of all, he hasn't even taken a single touch in Europe yet.
He was a major part of them winning the
I wouldn't call him a major, Anthony. Listen, in the group stages he did okay because they were playing against lesser talent. But when it came down from that game starting against Canada all the way to the finals, you kept seeing Buzio's time go down and down and down because he wasn't performing anymore. And that's my issue with Buzio. I like him.
He's still a kid, though. He's only 19.
Right. The potential is there. He's going to be good.
Yeah. But ace 19. So we got, if he doesn't make it this time around, he'll definitely be there the next time around.
Right, absolutely. So. It's just for Buzio, he needs to get some experience under him. And I think we're so deep in midfield.
Right. There's that other guy too that plays center mid. What's his name? Oh, Weston McKennie.
Exactly. Weston McKennie's going to be on that squad for sure. Tyler Adams.
Yep.
Right? Can't forget about Allen. Legit's going to be there. Yep. What do you think? Do they call up Roldan? I know he played in the Gold Cup final, but I'm not a big fan of him.
No. Don't forget about Areola.
Right, Areola. Is he technically a midfielder, though?
Yeah, I think he's a defensive midfielder. I think he plays like a CDM role.
I thought, no, we were playing Areola up top. Areola was playing as a winger. Yeah. So Areola wouldn't go into that midfield conversation. Yeah. Who else are we forgetting? I feel like we're forgetting. Musa.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Musa plays for Valencia. This is a guy that Berhalter went after directly and recruited him to make sure that he didn't play for any of the other four or five countries that he had a possibility of playing for, okay? I think this guy was able to play for Germany, Italy, Spain, and there was one other country that he was going to be able to play for because of his citizenships.
That's insane, isn't it?
So the fact that Berhalter went after him and recruited him personally, I think Musa is going to get the call up, and more so over Buzio, because this guy's kind of proven himself already at Valencia.
Yeah.
He's sticking around. Yeah. So our midfield's looking pretty good, man.
And then the up top is just incredible.
This is where we have...
It's incredible.
The firepower. So Pulisic, obviously. We're not getting rid of him anytime soon.
Nope.
He's our guy.
Now you got two players that have the DNA of great players from the past.
Yep.
Got Claudio Reyna's son,
Gio.
And then you have George Weah's son,
Tim.
Yeah.
Those two, in my eyes, Tim isn't getting a lot of experience at Lille right now. However,
no, he's only had 7 starts. He's been subbed in 21 times. Like I said before, what impresses me is he's taking chances. He's got 24 shots on target in such a short period of time. He's still growing. He's still learning.
Tim's going to be there for sure. There's no denying that. Gio Reyna, listen, what he's been doing at Borussia Dortmund the past year, nobody's taking him off of that squad.
What was his market value, I said before? $48 million?
Yeah, something
that's
like
insane.
That. That's something
insane
like that.
And then you got Sargent.
Sargent, listen, Werder Bremen player, another one. Good, fast player. He's going to be, I think he might actually get the nod over Weah at striker. He's going to be up there, no doubt. My issue comes down to these next couple of guys. Zardes. Hoppy, Areola, DK, and Gioacchini.
So, unfortunately, I don't think Gioacchini's going to even make it there. Then you got Areola and Hoppy. I think Hoppy's going to get there.
Hoppy deserves it after what he did at the Gold Cup. I think he does.
I thought Areola had a hell of a final, too.
But it's just so tough for me because now if we're looking at the future, I really like Gioacchini. Gioacchini, in the Gold Cup final, was the guy that came on, made the difference, secured the foul that allowed us to score the winning goal.
But you know what? All these names that we've mentioned, I don't even think we've reached 26 yet. So
no, we have.
Have we?
We have. We have.
Because on my paper, I don't have 26, but I also am missing like three or four guys that you mentioned that I didn't have on my list.
Right. My biggest one is, and I loved him this summer, and if he came up, I don't know if he would work, but Daryl DK.
Yeah. He played well, you know, but he was a savior in a lot of those games.
He was, but now, then there was also the times when he wasn't scoring.
Exactly.
And a lot of that could be contributed to how many games he's played over the last year. So it could have just been fatigue, getting tired. It's just tough. Like,
how do you bring him in when you got four guys, five guys that have pretty much locked in?
Like, do you bring him over Zardes? You can't. You almost can't.
You can't. That the article I was reading before said that he's the odd man out. You know, fortunately. How old is he? 21?
No. 22? DK's, 24, 25?
Okay.
DK's still pretty young, I believe.
So, you know, I don't think these guys actually get cut, right? They're on reserve. So if somebody gets hurt during qualifier, they're next in line, right? So
right. But it's just about what happens. Never mind. I was wrong. DK is 21.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You were correct.
Yeah.
The thing is, we want to qualify so bad.
Well, listen, let me tell you who they're playing against. Well, you know, for qualifications.
Let's hear it.
If they're going to play these guys that we mentioned, they're playing El Salvador, they're playing Canada, Honduras, Jamaica, Panama, Costa Rica, Mexico, and it just revolves around until March 30th. This is not the same team from 4 years ago. It's not the same coach from 4 years ago.
It is not.
In my eyes, none of these teams stand a chance, not even Mexico. So.
Well, we've proven that we can beat Mexico twice. And yeah. Here's the kicker, though. The third time is always the hardest.
Right. But the third time is going to be with the full-on, I don't want to call them elite, but 10 times better than what they faced the last few times.
Right. Well, let's not forget, Mexico also had some players in the Olympics, so they're going to be a full squad. Speaking of Mexico, I feel like we have to bring this up. How about David Ochoa opting to switch countries and go play for Mexico
now? He's not the only one that did it. There was another kid from the men's team that switched and went and played in Canada. You remember watching the Canada game?
Yes.
I forget the kid's name. Game started. His first start as a Canadian national team. Got hurt 5 minutes in. They had to sub him out.
Ooh. I don't know who the player is. I didn't know that fact. But the David Ochoa move. He saw that there's no spot for him with these keepers. All these keepers being like, you know, 25 to 27 years old. He's like, I'm not going to overtake any of them just based on age alone. So he opted to go with Mexico.
Well, hopefully he has some luck there.
Listen, I hope he does too. It's just...
I mean, me personally, looking at the schedule, I think the only two teams coming out of this going to the qualifying is Mexico and the United States.
Don't count out Costa Rica. Costa Rica.
The last time the United States played Costa Rica was a 6-1 win.
Right. But Costa Rica, every once in a while, will pull together that squad that they may not score a bunch of goals, but they also don't get scored on, which can make life hell for everybody. And that's actually something I wanted to bring up in my next point. So we were talking about Berhalter's coaching style before, and especially going into these qualifications. I feel like this has to be brought up. So Berhalter, when he started coaching, the first thing he did is he went over to Sweden to coach. He became one of the first Americans to coach over in Europe.
Okay.
He's coaching Hammarby IF. He got fired from Hammarby. Guess why?
Because he had nice sneakers?
No. They fired him and they said the reason was for his lack of attacking play. Listen to these stats real quick.
Oh my God. I can't just imagine right now.
Lack of attacking play, okay? Hear this out real quick. So in the 46 games he coached at Hammarby, he had 18 wins, 17 ties. The 17 ties is where it gets me. Have you watched the new episode of Ted Lasso?
No.
Oh, you're not on season 2 yet?
I've only watched episode 1. I don't have Apple TV.
So. Okay, fair enough. So, little spoiler alert here for anybody who is watching Ted Lasso, but 17 ties for Hammarby is like Ted Lasso right now going on an 8-game tying streak. That's what it reminds me of. And then 11 losses. So you fired him because he doesn't attack enough. But he had 53 goals for, 44 against. So he had a +9 goal differential. That sounds pretty good to me, especially for his first time coaching, right?
Exactly.
But it wasn't good enough. So then he goes over to Columbus Crew in the MLS. And he's with Columbus Crew from 2013 to 2018. This is now where analytics are starting to get big. And like we said, this guy's a perfectionist. So he's going through all the numbers, through all the analytics, always constantly watching film. 193 games with the Columbus Crew, okay? 74 wins, 49 ties, 70 losses. Yeah, it's a lot of losses. About a
500 record. But he wasn't coach. That Columbus Crew team wasn't the greatest team, so.
I wouldn't go that far. That Columbus Crew team qualified for the playoffs in 2014, 15, 17, and 18. So,
yeah, but they didn't win any championships, did they?
No, because they lost to the Portland Timbers, who had a hell of a squad.
Right.
But that was the 2015. Listen, who were the Columbus Crew before Berhalter came? Nobody's.
Yeah.
But so Berhalter had that run with Columbus Crew. And once again, goal differential, +5. So now we get to his next coaching gig, the United States national team. And as you said before, 35 games, 26 wins, 3 ties, 6 losses, 83 goals for, 23 goals against. He's at a +60 goal differential.
Right.
So this is what it's starting to tell me.
That he's not tying anymore.
It's not even about the ties.
I'm just joking.
Berhalter's tactics work, but you need the right players to execute it. Because what this is showing me is that Berhalter knows how to defend a game out and attack at the right opportune time. Now, we get it. CONCACAF competition isn't that great, but it seems to me that it works even against the better teams in CONCACAF.
Yeah.
He's going up against them, holding them, tiring them out, and then when it's the USA's opportunity to strike,
they strike.
They put one in the back of the net. I think this is something you brought up a few episodes ago, but they're playing the same style of soccer that Italy's men's national team used to play back in the 80s.
Right.
And it's working. I'm excited.
The question is, does it work against the European nations that have played against Italy? It's remained to be seen. I know they lost to Switzerland 2-1, you know, last year. So we'll see.
Listen, it's going to come down to the World Cup. Get through these qualifiers, USA. Bring us to another World Cup appearance. And then we'll know for sure if it works or not. Yeah. I'm excited, though. I think it will. I really believe this USA team can make at least the semifinals of the World Cup.
Yeah, I think so, too.
They're going to need a little bit of luck.
As long as FIFA doesn't rig the lottery and put them in the group of death and then, you know, put their hotel room 1,000 miles away from the stadium, they'll be all right, like they did in Brazil.
Well, we know for sure that we're not going to be playing against Qatar because we already beat them. So right. FIFA's going to make sure we don't go up against them.
Right.
Nah, man, it's going to be an exciting squad. Definitely, we'll have to keep all of you listeners updated on what
now,
the USA is doing.
If Berhalter's looking for somebody with experience, a little bit older, I might be available. You know, like we said, I start on the 22nd.
Pluck you right off your U40 squad.
I'll be ready to go in about a month. I'll be game shape ready.
Berhalter, you heard him. If you need a striker, listen. In case you don't call DK up, Anthony does the same exact thing.
Right.
He'll keep the bench warm for you.
I'll even make sauce and spaghetti.
Well, hold up. We don't know now with the nutrition programs if that's allowed for everybody.
Well, we'll use lentil spaghetti.
But I think that about covers it.
Yeah, absolutely.
For today's episode. So thank you to everybody for listening. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to whatever platform you're listening to us on. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at SavaFC, and we look forward to hearing from you and any comments you have.
Don't forget to leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to.
It greatly helps us out, and we'd appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Later, SavaFC community.